Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening from Fort Lauderdale. This is Nate Klarfeld with Stonewall Live, the best of gay and lesbian book, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, my guest is Vanessa Sheridan, America's leading authority on transgender in the workplace, helping business leaders solve problems by overturning the mysteries and cutting through the myths that surround the transgender phenomenon. She's the author of The Complete Guide to Transgender in the Workplace, a groundbreaking new business book, the first volume of this leading-edge topic ever to be released in hardcover by a major publisher. Ms. Sheridan is sought after as a speaker, trainer, consultant to businesses all over the country, and the topic of gender expression and inclusion. Welcome, Vanessa Sheridan. Hello there.
Hello, and thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be with you.
Thank you. I'm so excited. Let me first, before I ask the first question, let me just make a statement. Vanessa and I are on a board of directors of a fabulous organization called the Stonewall National Museum and Archives in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, America's jewel of a historical museum, archive, and gigantic library. There's our plug. Okay, we did it, right?
Well, it's an honor to be on the board with you and to have the chance to talk a little bit about that as well, so that's great.
Okay. My first question is about how did you get into this consulting work for transgender in the workplace? Tell us a little bit about your background.
Okay. Well, I'll try to give you the Reader's Digest version. I have been speaking and doing educational work and working with different organizations since 1991, and that's going back 20 years. And about 10 years ago or so, I was fortunate enough to be able to write the first book ever published on the specific topic of transgender Christian spirituality. And that book was a finalist for a Lambda Literary Award in 2002. And then in 2003, I co-wrote a book called Transgender Journeys, which continued that spirituality theme. And that, too, became a Lambda Literary Award finalist in 2004. Now, the reason I'm telling you this is because I've had a passion for the transgender community and for educating people about it for a long time. However, after the publication of those books, I realized that in order to reach more people, you have to go where the people are. Mm-hmm. So I asked myself, where are the adults, where are the people that need to be educated every day? And so the answer to that question for me was, well, they're out in the workplace. And so I began formulating some ideas as to how I might be able to utilize the knowledge that I have of the transgender community and transgender issues in general and be able to present that in a way that was meaningful and to do it in the context of workplaces and organizations. And so that's how I began working with companies, doing consulting work, doing training work, doing speaking work. And as a result of all that, I started writing my book, The Complete Guide to Transgender in the Workplace, which came out a couple of years ago, and I've been very gratified by the response to it. But it's been a sort of a cumulative process for me. It's not something that, you know, I just sat down one day and said, well, I'm going to do this. It's sort of evolved over time, and my hope mm-hmm. is that I can continue to evolve in terms of my own knowledge and ability to share this information with others.
Good. Listen, I want to remind people that there is a call-in number tonight to chat with Vanessa or make any comments. It's 805-830-8355, and it's on your show page, and we'll get to you. So just hold on if you get there, because I have lots of questions. Okay.
Well, I've got a few answers.
We hope so. So this is a loaded question. How does diversity fit into corporate America?
Oh, my goodness. Talk about a loaded question. There are so many responses that I could give to that question, but I think the biggest answer that I think most organizations would give you is that it provides them with a very distinct business advantage. Mm-hmm. Diversity is a way of gaining that competitive advantage in the marketplace. And,
right.
and it's how they develop the synergy and the paradigms and the communication procedures that allow companies to adopt a sort of a people-centered approach to doing business. So mm-hmm. I think that's a major key as to why diversity is so important. And I like to use the word inclusion as well. You know, people tend to focus on diversity as being something specifically about race, perhaps. But mm-hmm. inclusion, I think, is a bigger word that involves pretty much everybody. And so I tend to lean more on the word inclusion than on diversity. But the intent is the same. It's to simply provide businesses with the competitive advantage that they're looking for in the marketplace.
Great. Listen, I'm going to get a little bit into the nitty-gritty of what you do. A lot of what you do, and I've read parts of your book and parts of the things that have been written about your book, and so much of the book is about language and words and communication. Could you talk about that? Because this is the part that's confusing for even me, what I think is a well-educated gay man, which sometimes I'm not. But could you talk about some of the words and the language that you train people to work with?
Absolutely. I think it is really critical to provide people with a framework of understanding so that they can begin to comprehend and accept and respect the transgender phenomenon. And unless we have words to work with, you know, and that have definitions and meanings, and so that we can provide that framework of understanding, people aren't going to get very far with it. And so it's really important, I think, to provide people with a working vocabulary, and that's one of the things I do when I present workshops and seminars, is to give people a list of terminology, a list of words that we can use when you're referring to transgender individuals, so that hopefully we can alleviate some of the confusion that exists around the issue. You know, words like, what does it mean to be transsexual? Mm-hmm. What does the word transgender mean? You know, and I tell people it comes from two Latin words, trans, which means across, and gender, which evolves from the Latin word genus, which means classification. So a transgender person is, in actuality, one who crosses classifications. And that makes it a little bit easier, I think, for people to wrap their heads around the concept. And then we can move forward after that.
Right. And also the words about gender expression, you know, what pronouns to use, what is okay to talk about? How to act? You know, around a transgender person, which is the same as you would act around any person. But
we're all human beings,
right? But people are very nervous. I mean, especially if they're in a new situation, and you know, you do have you've laid a groundwork by your communication and the words that you use. Language is so important.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I always tell people, too, when I go into an organization and I work with them, I really am there to focus on behaviors. It's all about how we treat each other in the workplace. You know, it's about treating your colleagues with respect and professionalism and dignity so that we can all do our best work and everybody can do their best each day. It's hard to do in an environment that is not respectful and that is not
right.
So that's what I focus on is behaviors and how people treat each other.
And I just want to, you know, comment on something you said a little while ago about a diverse workplace is more productive and more conducive to people. There's a book, I think it was out about 8 or 10 years ago, called The G Factor or The Gay Factor, and it showed that in a more diverse employment, whether it's gays, lesbians, African Americans, transgender, old and young, you actually get a better view of the consumer that's trying to get the product that business is selling. The all-male, all-white IBM crowd could only sell to other all-male, all-white IBM consumers. And
So that
book, I guess, maybe even quantified it. I don't remember if it was called The G Factor or something like that. All right, I'm going to go back to questions about your training. Have you ever received any resistance to your training when you're with a corporation, and what kind of resistance have you ever received?
Well, I think you're always going to run into one or two people, perhaps, who may have reservations, or who may have, you know, religious objections or some sort of moral objection to what we're trying to do. And I always tell them, I respect that. You have every right to believe whatever you want and to think whatever you want, and nobody's here to change that. All we're here to do is focus, again, on behaviors and how we treat each other in the workplace. Mm-hmm. That's all.
Right.
And the organization, you know, has created, hopefully, you know, a policy that is mm-hmm. inclusive of gender identity and gender expression. And because that
Correct.
Exists and it's on the books and everybody is expected to abide by it, we need to
right.
learn how to do that. And that's
right.
why we have trainings, and that's why, you know, we deal with these issues. So when people have objections, I really try to focus on the behavior piece and not the beliefs piece.
Exactly.
I think that makes a real difference in terms of how people are able to accept what we're trying to provide.
Right, and that could be the same with any other person who is not exactly fits into whatever person's religious or social mores. You do act, but you still have a behavior, and the behavior. Actually, I believe behavior first, then your beliefs changes later. But that's okay. All right,
I'm with you there again, and that's why I focus on behaviors.
Right, exactly. Now this is something that you, in our little talks before this interview, you gave me a wonderful resource that I actually printed up and have been carrying around with me for 3 or 4 days. The National Center for Transgender Equality, along with the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, undertook a gigantic survey this year. I think almost 7,000 people were part of the survey. It was called the National Transgender Discrimination Survey. It's an incredibly, incredibly important document. I'm just going to tell people that if they want to see the document up close, to just Google National Transgender Discrimination Survey. National Transgender Discrimination Survey. It'll be the first thing that comes up. It's only a 4-page document. It'll lead you to the 228-page document. But I wanted to talk a little bit about it because it is incredibly eye-opening to everyone, and I mean everyone.
I agree. I'm so glad you are willing to talk about this because I believe it's one of the most important documents, particularly from a transgender perspective, that's ever been produced. This is a very large national survey that was done, as you said, of nearly 7,000 people, which is a pretty darn good, you know, sample population. And so the
exactly.
Reports that were generated out of this information and this data are chilling and in many cases heartbreaking, but they're also incredibly insightful, and they show us where the problem areas are, what needs to be addressed, and you know how we can approach some of these issues in a way that's going to make a difference and improve the lives of transgender individuals across the country. So I'm very excited about the potential impact of this document, which came out earlier this year, I believe, in February or March.
February,
if I'm not.
Yeah. Right. Are you still there?
I'm here.
Okay, good. I heard a click. Anyway, I'm going to read some of the things about it, and we're going to talk about them. Here's some of the bullet points. Double
okay.
the rate of unemployment. Near
yes.
universal harassment on the job. I've got this executive summary I have in front of me says 97% of those surveyed reported experiencing harassment or mistreatment on the job. Significant losses of job. 47% had experienced an adverse job outcome, such as being fired, not hired, or denied a promotion. 15%, now that is of the 7,000, lived on $10,000 a year or less. 15% of these people that were surveyed were living on $10,000 per year or less. Significant housing instability. 19% had been homeless. 19% had been homeless. 11% have faced eviction. 11% have faced eviction, and 26% were forced to seek temporary space. That is absolutely unacceptable in any country, but especially in the United States. So I just wanted to just give you some of the thumbnails of what this survey was talking about. It's absolutely amazing. 26% of people were fired right on the spot when their employers found out they were transgender. 26%, 1 out of 4. That's a huge problem, isn't it?
Absolutely it is. And to me, it points out the absolute need for continuing education. The only way you're going to change hearts and minds is to educate those hearts and minds. You have to do that by providing resources, by providing books, providing documents such as the survey, by providing trainings, by informing people that this population exists, that they need to have the same rights as every other citizen, and they need to be able to pull themselves out of poverty, as you mentioned. You know, so many are living on less than $10,000 a year. We have to get transgender people employed, and unfortunately, the unemployment rate for transgender people is twice the national average. You know, we're at around 20%, something like that, which is just horrible. The only way to get out of this mess and to achieve full equality for transgender people is to educate the general public. And I'm working very hard to do that in on as many different fronts as possible. Obviously, no one person can do that. There are many people who are taking on this kind of work. I think about our mutual friend Brian McNaught, who is doing such a wonderful job. And there are others as well. I worked with Allison Robinson of the Human Rights Campaign earlier this year, who's doing a fabulous job of educating folks. And I also sit on the National Transgender Committee for Out and Equal, which is, as you're aware. And so that's another way that we can help educate people and make a difference. So there are a lot of opportunities, but there is so much work to be done. And this survey, I think, indicates the depth of the need for continuing education.
Right. I want to go over one more part in the survey. And there's the survey. We could talk about the survey for 3 days, but one amazing part of the survey on the very last page of the executive summary that I have in front of me had the sample demographics, and it was the there's two maps. There should have been a third map because I know what the third map looks like. The first one says trans people in the national in the NCTE task force sample. This was the 7,000 people that were surveyed, and the other one right next to it was the population density of the United States. When you they're almost identical. They're almost 100% identical, which is not true for gay and lesbian. We have that GLBT. We have gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender. I've seen the demographic dot sample of gays and lesbians, and we live in 10 cities. 80% of us live in something like only 10 cities in the United States, and I can name them, but I don't want to waste time here. But you know what they are? They're the gay meccas, the large cities. They're the blue states, except for Miami and Fort Lauderdale.
Also, the San Franciscos, New Yorks, and the LA,
Boston, Chicago, Dallas, Atlanta. We've almost named them all. Washington D.C. and that's it. And basically that's where, and Dallas. And that's where people live, and the transgender community does not follow that population, which is a whole other plate on this buffet of what needs to be done. I mean, it's not an issue. I mean, when you look at I don't remember the number, but the majority of gay and lesbian people who identify themselves as gay and lesbian live in states or counties that have domestic partnership benefits. I live in Fort Lauderdale. We have domestic partnership benefits. We have hospital visitations. If you work for the state or the city or county, you get automatic benefits, pensions, all these other things. You know, you have the six states at the District of Columbia, including Iowa, that have gay marriage now, and probably in a few months we'll probably have California and a few others thrown in there, and that covers the majority of the population.
Right.
In the transgender community, you've got to go to all 50 states, every single county.
You do.
The distribution. Go ahead.
You know, there is no magnet that draws transgender people to one location or another. We're spread out everywhere. We are everywhere. And we are mostly invisible, which is, one of the problems that we face is that people are not motivated to create change for something they can't see. And so it's really that transgender people come out whenever they can, whenever it's safe to do so, and be visible. Because the more visible we become, the more relevant we become. on a social and political and economic basis. So it's just absolutely essential that that all of us who can come out and be visible do that on our own behalf.
Do you think a lot of transgender people are hiding in the closet, their own closet?
Oh, gosh, yes. I would
say
the vast majority are. And that's primarily due to the social stigma that exists around the whole concept of being transgender. One of the exercises that I do when I do trainings is I get a board, a blackboard or a whiteboard or whatever it might be, and I ask someone to be a scribe, and then I poll the audience. I ask them to come up with as many names for transgender people as they can, and I tell them, let's go with the dirty words, with the slurs, anything you can think of. And it is remarkable to me how many negative terms people come up with for transgender folks. That's indicative to me of the social climate that exists and the social understanding that centers around the transgender phenomenon. And we have to change that understanding. And again, I get back to it time and time again, but this is the only way we're going to do it. We have to do it through education. We have to do it through informing people and through giving people some positive role models to look at as well.
Exactly.
The more successful, healthy transgender people who can come out and be visible in society, the more people are going to sit back and go, oh, okay, I can deal with that.
They're just a decent
person. They work hard. They raise their families. They pay their taxes.
Right.
They live, like citizens are supposed to live. But until we're able to do that and get out from under the negative social stigma that exists, we're going to have a hard road to hoe.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think this war, and it looks like you need to have an all-out war, assault to get the education out, is going to be one in the water coolers, in the backyards, in the carpools, where people just see a positive role model and say, hey, they're just like us, except they've got blue, they've got brown hair, blue eyes, whatever the difference is. It is just a variation of our own species, not anything else.
We're different, not diseased.
Correct, that's what I meant. Blue eyes and brown eyes. Correct.
We're different. Now, there are some differences that are palpable and that are very real, and that's okay. But we have a great deal more in common with the rest of the population than we don't.
Oh, my God, yes. Everyone, you just want to have a peaceful place to go home to at night and a meaningful job. That's all. That's a wonderful, those are wonderful
Everybody
things.
Everybody want that?
Everybody wants that, exactly. You're exactly right. I want to talk a little bit about workplace accommodation. I know that's not a sticking point, but that seems to be whenever a transgender bill comes up, or when a piece of legislation comes up, we hear about workplace accommodation. I always bristle because I always laugh because I can't imagine it being an issue, but. Could you talk a little bit about how you work with a company on workplace accommodation for the transgender community?
Yeah, I like to, when I come into an organization, and if they have not done anything at all about the transgender, employee, the first thing I strongly recommend is that they amend their company's employee non-discrimination policy to include gender identity and gender expression. That way, it falls under the umbrella of corporate protection, from that standpoint.
Exactly.
So that's the first piece. The second piece is to create some meaningful procedures and guidelines that give management and rank and file employees, sort of a template that they can follow if they're dealing with transgender issues at work. Managers need to have some sort of guideline to follow when an employee comes out to them, perhaps, or
I want
to transition from one sex to another. Managers need to have something to help them do that. And so I always like to provide, a meaningful set of guidelines and procedures to help them, make that work. And then the last piece for me involves training of work groups, I recently did a consulting job with a company out in the San Francisco Bay Area, and an employee was transitioning from male to female. And one of the first things that the company wanted to do was to do some training for that employee's direct work group so that the people with whom they interact every day would have an idea of what's going on, which is really important. But it's also important to try to, you know, get everybody on the same page and bring, you know, the entire organization up to speed, hopefully. Hello, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here. I'm just listening in awe here. You're doing great. Anyway, great. That's amazing. I mean, it really is. I mean, you have like a whole, like your whole, you are the one woman war hero on this.
Well, you know, I try not to use militaristic terms, but I think all of us who do this kind of work are doing what we can. No one person can do it all, and I'm
exactly.
Certainly very much my own limitations, but you do what you can with what you've got.
Vanessa, I got fired up when I read that survey, so sorry. It was the first time I'd seen it a few days ago, so I'm still in the angry that I live in the same country with all these other people. You know, I mean, I'm sure you. This is something you've lived your entire life with. You've worked with this. You've seen it every day. I haven't, so that's why I was using all the militaristic war terms.
Well, like, you know, I'm very much aware of the problems that exist, and unfortunately, I know so many people in the transgender community who struggle, you know, to just keep body and soul together on a daily basis.
Exactly.
It's very sad. And here
right.
in the richest country, world, we need to make sure that every
right.
citizen has their basic needs taken care of so
right.
that they can, you know, be a contributing member of society.
Exactly, exactly. I have just nothing but amazing respect for the work you're doing. I have another, we're only like 3 or 4 minutes left. I have more questions, but here we go.
Okay.
A young transgender young man or young woman comes to you for advice. 18, 19, 20 years old, what would you tell them?
Well, let's see. What kind of advice are they asking for?
What kind of job, what kind of life can I expect?
Oh, okay. All right. Well, first of all, let me share with you that there are currently no federal laws in place to protect the rights of transgender people.
Wow.
About 15 states and the District of Columbia now have laws on the books that do protect the rights of they're transgender citizens. But that means that there are 35 states that still don't have any laws to protect those citizens. And I think it's really important that we do what we can to push for some sort of national, you know, law that protects, again, the rights
exactly.
of transgender citizens. So a young transgender person, I would say the first thing you need to know is you don't have any federal protections. Depending on the state in which you live, you may or may not have some protections. So that's going to be important. You need to find that out. The second is you're going to have to deal with a lot of different social issues, you know, in terms of potential acceptance. You're going to have to deal with financial ramifications. Be aware of that. It depends on what kind of job you have, where you work, what organization you work for. Which is going to certainly affect your economic standing. And these are things that, you know, a young transgender person needs to know about, they need to be aware of. They need also to hopefully be aware of and have a sense of self. And by that I mean, do you know who you are? Now,
mm-hmm.
when I was 18 or 19, I didn't have a clue. I didn't even come out as transgender until I was in my 30s.
Wow.
And, you know, I've always been a late bloomer. I get to the party very late. But when I do, I try to make up for lost time.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I would tell you now, things are much better for young people now than they were when, you know, 20 years ago.
And they're coming out at age 13.
Exactly, or younger, and they have the internet, and they have access to resources that didn't
right.
exist, you know, when I was that age. So I'm very happy about that, and there's more acceptance in general on a social basis than there's ever been. But there are still so many areas where it's you take your life in your hands if you go out in public as a transgender person. If you don't pass, you know,
right.
Chances
right.
are you. Be attacked. You can be beaten up, even killed.
That's correct.
And
that's correct. We have 15 seconds.
Okay.
Okay, listen.
I'm done.
You just got on a mission. That's okay. I just wanted to make sure. Listen, good night from Fort Lauderdale. Vanessa, this was a dream, and you know we're going to have you back in a few months to do part two of Vanessa Sheridan. Thank you and so much. Good night.
Good night.